Hello, dear listeners. Editor JT here. We are very excited to announce that the secret project we've had in the works is now officially live. We just launched our new YouTube channel, First Thought, a bite-sized, explicitly socialist news show you can watch on a work break or on the job if you want to steal 5 minutes from your boss. We upload 3 times a week, so you'll always have the most up-to-date news from around the world, including the stuff that the mainstream media won't cover. First Thought is available right now on YouTube and, as another little surprise, on Nebula. Make sure to check it out, and we hope it's a welcome addition to your daily routine. Now, on to the show.
I'm a little bummed that we're not doing the camera on right now because I am currently wearing a Dua Lipa shirt. I did wear my Dua Lipa shirt on purpose. We are all Albanian on this day.
We are.
Exactly right.
You know, she is. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't get started with the ball composing this early. But, you know, just wanted to let you know that I am currently wearing a Dua Lipa shirt.
Honestly, even the staunchest anti-Albanian, you know, Serb or Montenegrin or Bosnian, when they listen to Dua Lipa, the Yugoslavia starts re-emerging in our dear souls, which includes Albania.
Yes.
People forget the bunkers.
If she was a Tito, she would be unstoppable.
Oh, hell yes. Hell yes.
Exactly right. Shame she was Albanian, not some mixing of all your ethnicities. Then she would have been actually the
exactly. No, she's probably she's super mixed between all the other ones, and our Albanian listeners are probably going to lose their shit. I know a shit ton of Albanians, right?
JT, they're all Turks, bro.
I got shit faced last night with an Albanian. This dude was like meter 60, 65, so that in American freedom eat like units, I have no idea how much that is. But all Albanians are very, very short motherfuckers. But the closer you go towards Kosovo. And the closer you go to Serbia, the taller they become. And as we all know, Dua Lipa is a very tall Albanian woman.
Do you hear
woman.
The race realism?
Yes, hardcore.
Right now.
I'm sorry. This is
legit like skull
measuring. I was
going to
say, I hear the calipers coming out.
Height measuring. Okay, there is no difference between people based on head size. I think Hassan will approve this because he's a small baby boy. Actually, you're not. But the closer you go to Serbia, the taller the fucking Albanians become, which is why, obviously, inter-ethnic names. So basically, my argument is, no matter how much Dua Lipa does not want to admit it, her, just like all peoples of this world, are also part Serbian.
Well, can you explain, actually, Hassan, since we actually have you on the podcast, could you explain you having a small head meme? I don't get it. You have a regular size head. Is there something I'm missing?
Thank you for saying that. I have PayPal'd you. Oh, wait, PayPal doesn't work in Iraq, I think. So I will be using, what the fuck could you use as a payment processor?
International wire, and then afterwards basically be harassed at
or
the bank.
Or G-Bucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I work with, one of my editors, like I work with mostly my fans, right? That become editors. And one of them's in Pakistan, and it is such a bitch to pay him. Like, it is so. Yeah. And like, that's a CIA client state. Like, what the fuck's going on? You know what I mean? At least let them have PayPal, you know? But it's so frustrating. Anyway, that was random.
No, JT, it's proper because JT, for example, has me and Hakeem by the balls. Actually, this is a new podcast lore that maybe all the listeners don't know, because it was extremely difficult to like organize a legal entity in which we are like all members of. So basically, we're registered in front of the state and in front of the world as JT's literal employees. So if at any point he wakes up one morning and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to make this podcast mine," which is impossible because the podcast is literally the three of us talking into a fucking microphone, he would basically legally be able to do it. We're what are we even classified as, Hakeem? We're like the contractors. That's the fucking
shit.
Term.
I have no idea. So. Basically, no pension plan from JT, from Second Thought Enterprises or whatever. Second Thought Inc.
There's a reason I've got you boys locked in the basement and producing content for me, because I know that this requires all three of us. And then, despite my legal privileges as your big scary boss, you need to be contained, otherwise you'll flee.
Man, with these fucking chatbots, exactly, you probably can take like, what, like 500 hours worth of content that we've already made into a chatbot and it's going to recreate us perfectly. Which for Hassan, that would be probably even easier. And no, Hassan, I'm not calling you vanilla. Just you literally have, what, like 100,000 streaming hours or some shit? Just plug all of that.
Before this started popping off, like chatbots and whatnot, like my editor, Austinox, had already made Hostinox. I gave him permission like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think, to start like basically, you know, stealing my voice and recreating an artificial intelligence. He's been doing that for, we've been doing that at Twitch for years before it like started becoming way more mainstream.
Are we even talking to Hassan right now, or is it just fucking Austinox?
The guy who's typing very quickly.
Yeah, you can never know. I mean, I think like that technology is not as terrifying. It's at its infancy, so it's pretty obvious when you're talking to a chatbot. Like I try to get it to do some shit every now and then for content, and it's like so fucking boring. And it's never interesting, unique, clever, and it's overall very liberal.
Is it though?
Yeah, straight lib answers.
Is it? Because like when I ask it anything like fascism related, like I want to make a video or whatever, a fucking essay, it immediately does not want to give you any like pro-fascist arguments. But whenever I ask it to...
Yeah, that's why I say it's very liberal.
Yeah, no. But when I ask it to like explain something from a quote Marxist perspective, it doesn't just, give me the 100 gorillion dead Stalin big spoon vuvuzela. It actually like gives me proper like Marxian like views and analysis, blah blah blah. But that's probably because I feed it.
There's
a post
from the same source,
exactly.
Right?
But I'm just waiting for somebody to edit that out and force it to give the same sort of prompts that it gives whenever you ask it, like questions about fascism, right? So they're gonna do. Probably gonna go in that direction.
So you get the typical Wikipedia page for the answers. I was gonna ask a very controversial question for a Turk.
All right, let's hear it.
What is your preferred topping on lahmacun?
Oh, it's not that. I don't think it's that controversial at all. First of all, I'm a raw boy. I only do onions. I think that onions is the best. Like I'm a purist in that sense. Maybe a little bit of lemon. I'll hit it with a dab of lemon. What's maidanoz in English? What is? I don't know what it is called. The
McDonald's?
The green shit. What is it called? Maidanoz? What would you say? Parsley? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I was going to say, would you absolutely stuff it full of parsley?
No.
to unlock the... No. All right. Yes.
No. So here's the thing.
There's
a lot of people
no
do that.
Blood.
A lot of people do that in Turkey, and I don't fuck with that. I think like lahmacun, the meat, the minced meat, like all of that is perfect. Like I want everything else to be complementary to the meat. And I feel like when you put the parsley, when you just, load it up with parsley, I think it's too much. Some people put tomatoes in there too. I don't know. I, that's why I said like onions, the spiced onions that we would like sumak. That's as far as I would go, I think. And a dash of, oh my God, my mouth is watering, bro. I haven't had lahmacun in years.
Really? Dude, make it at home, man. It's not that hard.
No, I don't got time to make lahmacun, bro. I'm
dude, you can stream
streaming.
It. You could literally stream making lahmacun and get paid probably to do it. Just
well, yeah, that's true. I definitely would. That would pop off.
Dude, just fucking, it's a lot of fun to make too. And you get to mess about, like, if you like it a bit spicier or less spicy, depending on your tastes, then you can play around with that. If you like to throw sumak into the actual meat mix as well. By the way, JT, I'm sorry, we completely lost you.
That's
right
okay.
Now,
I'm over here playing Subway Surfer.
Even I'm like hanging on by a thread. You know, I'm basically almost one of the fucking people. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
are
exactly
fucking
right.
No, like I don't know. Parsley's looked very down upon in like Western Balkans, especially. I don't even know why. It's looked as, a cheat code to actually give additional taste to meals that already can have it without it because it's so intense.
Parsley tastes like healthy but good.
I'm not the biggest parsley fan, straight up. I mean, I'll have it. I'm not against it. Mm. But yeah, I'm not going crazy over it.
This is the hard-hitting interview questions that people come to us for, so don't...
Yeah.
So boys, I've got one thing to ask of you, one humble favor. Today is my 30th birthday. I would love nothing more than for the three of you boys to sing me happy birthday.
You old
motherfucker.
It's your
fucking birthday. Your 30th. Jesus Christ. Yeah. What language are we singing it? Let's all sing all it in the different them. Language. And by the way, got, happy yeah. birthday, bro. Why the fuck didn't you tell me it's your birthday? I'm actually supposed to know it's your birthday. Jesus Christ. Let's all at the same time. So in Arab, in Turkish, and I'll do Serbo-Croatian. Let's all shout at our mics right. and do happy birthday for 10 seconds.
This is going to be chaotic.
Sounds Does that good. Sound good? Right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, please.
Three, two, one. Danas nam je divan dan, divan dan, divan dan. Našem JT urođen dan, urođen dan, urođen dan. Jesus, okay.
Yeah, JT. Sana helwa.
Mutlu yıllar sana, JT.
Thank you, boys. That was beautiful.
You get a clap, and then you... And now you have to do the weird Indonesian slash Brazilian tradition of almost blowing out your cake and then everybody picking up pieces of your cake and then throwing them at you. I don't know why they do it, but they do it. So
that sounds like
please, fun. Please imagine that. No, it's horrible. Have you seen the video of that like 8-year-old? He gets his ass beat by his family. They're just fucking...
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of The Deprogram. Today we have the arguably most requested guest of all time, the most handsomest of handsome boys, the Twitch leftist menace, the ultimate Gen Z communist whisperer, Hassan Piker, joining us directly from LA. Hassan, for those of you living under a tree, is in my modest opinion one of the most successful socialist agitators of our time, having found a perfect blend between entertainment and information. He's been able to introduce countless short attention span having people to the anti-capitalist school of thought, including, as we previously learned, even my girlfriend to an extent. So without further ado, hello Hassan, thank you for coming, and please tell our audience a bit about yourself before we get started.
What's going on, everyone? Thanks for having me. I live in LA. I am a bourgeois class trader. Not really, but that's what everybody thinks I am. And I do Twitch streams. I'm just an entertainer who has a relatively anti-capitalist perspective, I would say. But I try to do my best.
Very good. So everyone here. And everyone in general simps for like American Hassan. And while most have heard about him, we want to hear in the style of this truly international show a bit more about Turkish Hassan. You know, JT is enough America for a whole continent, let alone this show. And thanks. With me, Hakim, and you, we would, I guess, basically be recreating the whole Ottoman Empire. God forbid, from my perspective, you motherfuckers are probably salivating or some shit. But
It was the glory days for everybody.
Give our listeners some motherfucker. Give our listeners some background. When did your family moved to the States, and you know what was like proper, like old school Turkish Hassan, like very different from who you are today, or not? Give us a rundown.
Could you give us your social security number?
Yeah,
sorry.
So my family never technically moved to America. I guess depending on how you look at it, like my dad still lives in Turkey. I'm an anchor baby in the sense that like I was given birth to on U.S. soil, so I could have American citizenship, but immediately shipped back to Turkey, grew up in Turkey until I was 18. I did visit America on certain summers, obviously come from an affluent background. You can't do that when you're in Turkey unless your family is like kind of caked up, you know, or at least like in some way, shape or form connected to America. So I did all that. I was always fascinated with American culture. I was an Amerabu, as I like to call it. You know, I read English books. I watched American TV shows. And that's part of the reason why, like, I have been fully assimilated to American culture before even stepping foot on U.S. soil permanently. And, when I was 18, I came out here for college. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do that more than anything else. Like, kids were asked, like, what do you want to do when you're older? My goal was go to college in America. I'm not even kidding. I don't know why. That was like something I loved so much because, you know, it's not as great as people make it out to be. It's pretty fun, but it's not like the absolute best thing on the planet, right? And that's what I would say. And then I did. I did do that. And I inevitably I moved from University of Miami to Rutgers because I was partying a little too hard. My parents did not like that. And then after graduating Rutgers, I was like, I need to get the fuck out of New Jersey. And I moved to Los Angeles. Two different instances where I basically like lied to my parents was one, originally my dad didn't want me to come to America, go to college. So I was just, you know, I kind of studied, not fully, but in secret for the SATs. And then the second time was when I was like, yeah, I'll take the LSATs in Los Angeles. I'll take the law school SATs basically in Los Angeles. And then I had no intention to go into law school.
I mean, that's very interesting because a lot of like, I personally met a shit ton of people that get shipped back here at some point that, for example, grew up for like 15, 16, 17 years in the States. And then they come to check out the quote unquote old country. And a lot of them fall in love with it. Not only fall in love with it, but they realize that you, as funny as it sounds, get some bigger benefits here in this like developing world than you might get over in quite literally the richest country on the planet. But there's also obviously the opposite, which I guess is very similar to your situation. And I hear like people, my friends that live, be it in the US, be it in Canada or the UK, constantly talk about how when they have kids, they will definitely try and have their kids raised locally in the quote unquote old country so that they don't get, become fucking English or God forbid, fully American. So there's a,
oh yeah, gross.
Yeah. So it's always very interesting to me because they understand the practicality of, you know, in living in a developed rich country. And no matter how much they talk about, you know, oh, I am fully integrated and I love this place, et cetera, et cetera. Deep down, they're kind of like disgusted, if I can use that word, by those particular places. And they want their child to not be raised in this sort of environment. So it kind of leads to the point that at the end of the day, they live there because they, that's where you can make some money and have a decent living for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah.
Here's a side question, actually, that I wondered, because I get this a lot, and I don't know, maybe it's slightly racist, maybe it's not, I have no idea, but people will say that, hey, your English sounds too clear or clean for somebody who isn't American. Likewise with you, from what I've heard, your English sounds like an perfectly clear American accent. Uh-huh. Have you ever gotten any weird, like quasi-racist nonsense, like, oh, but you're a Turk, where's your Turkish accent? Or has this always been the case? Did you ever have an accent before?
No, I never had an accent, but no, I hear that all the time, but I don't know. I don't give a shit, whatever, fuck them. I think like I have a lot of benefits as like a white dude who, you know, if you don't know what my name is, you're not going to know what my background is for the most part. I mean, I guess some people always say like, no, brother, we can tell that you're not white. But I don't really experience it. I think I have like a lot of privilege that way. So I don't really give a shit when people do that, like microaggressions and whatnot. But yeah, of course, always. Yeah, there's always going to be microaggressions, stuff like that about what my name is. Like people used to get shocked when they found out that I was like Turkish back in the day. Or the way people perceive me, that definitely is a thing. You know, there was the cracker discourse here on Twitch. I'm a big time advocate of anti-white slurs.
Likewise.
I think it's America's own version of like harmless Balkan posting. And these dumb motherfuckers can't even recognize that. And they get like, they're trying to be like all these edgy boys are trying to be upset about it. Mm-hmm. They're trying to manufacture outrage over like the one area where it's like always appropriate and acceptable to make fun of. So stupid. Mm. But yeah, that when that was happening, people were like, oh, he's not white. they were busting out phenotypes.
The calipers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were busting out the calipers faster than you got Nick talking about, you know. How much taller Albanians become the closer they get to Serbia.
Exactly. No, that's exactly what I wanted to interrupt you with. Arguably, a lot of that probably your some ancestor or some shit is a fucking Slavic dude from the Balkans that was taken to be a janissary and some shit, and that's why you have your beautiful pasty skin or some shit. But that would be extra ironic. That would be extra ironic because, you know,
Hassan is entirely Greek.
Oh, now that's proper Balkan posting right there.
To be fair, he's not even wrong though. Like on my dad's side, half of my family is Greek Turk, which is really funny because like they're super dark.
Yeah.
Darker.
Exactly. I always found that the funniest shit. You'll hear the discourse. You'll hear them throwing their slurs at each other, and I look at some Greeks sometimes. Like I have for a layover somewhere in Greece. Or a meat Greeks, and I'm like, you motherfucker, you look more Arab than fucking my, right, screw you, guy.
Yeah, my grandfather on my dad's side is like straight dark, you know what I mean? Like super fucking dark. Mm. And then my grandparents on my mom's side are from Kilis, which is, you know, they got like Arab and Kurd and a whole bunch of other shit in them, you know what I mean? Like, and they're actually, ironically, a little bit lighter. Which is weird, but then Cenk is like really dark, as you guys know. My uncle, the liberal reactionary now, Young Turks host.
Everyone has a cringe uncle. Everyone has like a nice uncle and a cringe uncle.
You gotta have. Well, he was the nice uncle when I was growing up. Now he's become the cringe uncle. I mean, I still love him. It's like hard not to, you know, it's family, but like, fuck, man. He's always posting cringe.
And it's extra fucked up because you're in the same fucking industry, so to an extent, so the cringe kind of directly affects you and doesn't affect you, and probably the way he sees your shit, so your cringe affects him as well. But but
my cringe is not real, like, in my opinion. My cringe is always like manufactured drama, outrage, people being like, I can't believe he said what he said about 9/11. Like, it's just like. That's what I. That's how I feel about it. At least maybe you guys have some. Maybe you guys have some difference in opinion here. You can come after me.
Yeah, but we are very much against talking badly about 9/11 or the United States deserving. Very adamant on this position.
Exactly right.
Especially Hakim, you know, especially because 9/11 every day.
Have you seen that picture
when he
was young? Have you seen that photo of the Chinese emperor and he's standing, like the drawing of the Chinese emperor, he's standing next to the Twin Towers.
The Twin Towers.
And it says unlimited genocide in the first world. that's basically me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was, and unironically, this is like solidified in my brain. I think I said this story like before on the podcast, which kind of reveals, because I'm a mixture between a lot of Balkan nationalities, but kind of really reveals where I grew up, but I don't give a fuck. I remember 9/11 specifically, walking into the fucking living room and like everybody sitting around the TV, and that lasting for around 30, 40 seconds, and then just starting to hear gunshots in the street of people starting to fucking celebrate that the Yanks fucking got it on them. Obviously fucked up because, you know, innocent people died, et cetera, et cetera. But people were taking out tables in the street, calling musicians, fucking partying, like hardcore partying for the 12, 14 hours after that. My dad was like passed out fucking drunk that day. It was a proper event, but I am ashamed of the behavior of my passion and of my peoples. And I especially do not condone.
Hey, you guys celebrated our behalf. I don't know what to tell you, dude. It was the most somber ass. I went up and I was looking and I was like, what's going on here? And there's just like, you know when you're a young kid and you walk into a room of somber adults, and you're like, the vibe is off, something's fucked up here. That was basically it. And I remember my dad was like, this is gonna come back to us somehow, isn't it? And hey, 2 years later, hey.
I love everyone's background on this, because like in the most Turkish like NATO ally ass way, it just, one way or another, it did not impact me or Turkey in any meaningful capacity. I mean, obviously it did. Like, everything changed after that, especially how we're perceived in America and whatnot. But, like, hearing all of your individual stories and how it impacted you or what your reaction was is so funny, considering, like, Turkey's position where, like, people weren't really, like, people didn't give a shit. You know what I mean?
Second largest NATO army, right?
Yeah, exactly. Perks of being a NATO ally.
On the periphery of NATO too. Mm. Yeah, it's hilarious. It's like, oh yeah, we're fully in NATO, but we fucking hate all the rest of them.
No, that's my favorite. Turkey's position in NATO is awesome because it's like, is the only NATO country that routinely is engaging in proxy wars with other NATO countries or directly fighting them. Yeah. Like, yeah. Which is so funny.
And NATO is, and Turkey has been basically in an active conflict zone, in a war, in my modest opinion, for like the last half a decade, if not a decade. Nobody fucking talks about this. Like, there's Turkish soldiers and tanks shooting at enemy army shit. Like, proper, like, actual direct conflict, not like a frozen shit or whatever, or them looking at each other angrily over some hill or some shit. It's in an active conflict zone, in an active war, but nobody, like, nobody gives a fuck, man.
Yeah, but on top of, like, unless you're talking about, I don't know if you're just, like, simply talking about Syria, but, like, on top of that, we're talking Greeks. There's constant fucking air battles, and there's constant, like, land, you know, land, sea, border conflict happening with Greece. And then also on top of that, there's like a proxy battle kind of happening with France in Libya. So there's so much, and Turkey is always offering support to Somalia and numerous other countries, like numerous other African nations that would, that you could technically consider to be like French colonies too. There's like so much, there's a lot of shit happening that Turkey engages in on a regular basis in international policy that is like unimaginably unacceptable from the standpoint of NATO. But because they have, you know, like you said, a massive army and a decent amount of support for, you know, our DARPA style.
Land borders right into.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
And I love the recent, like, cucking of Sweden and Finland, but basically them saying, nah, you ain't joining unless you call what we call the bad guys.
Yeah, but they went back
guys.
On it now.
Well, they were always going to. Yeah, they're Turkey, Erdogan loves speaking a big fucking game about how, you know, anti-West he is, but like he is a dog to the West, just like every other leader has always been historically. You know, Turkey is the closest you can get to like not really being a client state while being a client state. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's hard to describe. It's not as bad as like Pakistan, let's say, but it's still very much, it's like having, it's like being a CIA client state that's like schizophrenic.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. The United States holds the like largest opposition leader. I mean, doesn't hold him, but they have him as a guest in the U.S. and whatnot.
See, that's exactly the point. So, first of all, that you're talking about Fethullah Gulen, he is a CIA asset, right? What's hilarious about Fethullah Gulen is that he's not even originally an opposition leader. The parallel government that he created, which he did with the, you know, funding support of the American State Department, he created alongside Recep Tayyip Erdogan originally. They're basically both from that similar, same, you know, supposedly moderate fundamentalist, you know, Islamist cult that they grew into power side by side. That's why Fethullah Gulen was so successfully able to put his tentacles into every aspect of Turkish society, every from, you know, the judicial system, all the way to the army and all the way to the fucking police force. Even he was able to do that with the help of the CIA. That's why he's able to live in a compound in the Poconos, right? So, you know, even then, I think that you know, America did a coup, or America helped in the making of a coup in Turkey that failed ultimately. But you know, they originally wanted Erdogan and Fethullah Gulen to be side by side, and we're working side by side.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. No, exactly right.
And to me, it's like back when like the NATO conversation, it's like, you know, the Turks, they get to be like our soldiers and fight our wars and so on. So NATO acceptance into NATO completely, you know, greenlit. But them joining the actual European Union, nah. We actually keep that for the real Europeans. They're going to probably do the absolutely same fucking thing with the Georgians and shit. Which Georgia, by the way, literally the most liberal people on planet Earth. Again, I know like 50 fucking Georgians. Yes, great statistics, absolutely. I am yet to meet a non-just very classical, typical lib dude, right? He's like, man, we want like elections like in the States, bro, and we want like the separation of powers, bro, and you know, we want to be like the Yanks,
the
bro.
Types.
It's absolutely fucking incredible.
Yeah, the Americucks.
Yeah, hardcore.
The worst kind. You sometimes see them in Turkey too, don't you? These people who are like, oh no, we want to be respectable
self-orientalizing
setup, just like the United States. Yeah, this disgusting nonsense. Very rarely you get these people in Iraq as well. You get their cucks in the government for sure, but you get these types, usually university campuses. And then I don't think anybody likes these people. I don't think they have any friends. They definitely don't have any organizations.
It's like you take like three courses of political science, and I did a fucking whole degree in this fucking shit for some fucking reason. Kill me. But they take three courses in political science, and they think they understand how the world works, and that they've explored the depths of philosophy by, I don't know, reading John Locke or some shit, or the Leviathan. Oh my God. No, I'm brilliant, man.
You got me. Society, please, bro. Please. Oh. You seem to mistake. It's not systemic imperialism and unequal exchange draining raw materials from the Balkans. It's the Balkan mind, okay? The systemic defects of the Balkan mind.
Absolutely. One friend of mine had like a theory. This might sound a bit ableist, but I don't care. He had a genuine theory that if we did like research on the percentage of autism all over the world, and then we... what part of the population it is, and we did it on the Balkans. On the Balkans, it would like be 85% or some shit. He's like, these people. This is like, but yeah, again, self hate, never wanting to look at the material reality. Yeah. Blah 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 shit. All our viewers and listeners already know. So let's move into, I guess, another topic here. I personally think that a very large part of your appeal, and I'm talking to Hassan, is your ability to give your Yankee audience a nuanced non-US point of view while delivering it in a way that's highly digestible by said Yankee audience, something you'd arguably not be able to do as efficiently if not for your background. Basically, the fact that you've lived outside of the US for so long doesn't let, American exceptionalism seep into your soul. Apologies for my $5 psychoanalysis here. Let me get to like the actual question. Like, what was your, let's call it career trajectory like? Give us some lore. And why do you think, your show grew to be as successful as it like objectively has, other than the fact that you're insanely hot and tall, of course.
You know what's really funny? First of all, you kind of nailed it already. People are gonna get mad at you for glazing me up so hard. But you just dial it back. Just say that I'm like a fake socialist or something. Just like sneak it in there.
Of course.
so that people don't get mad.
We already called you Greek. I think that's the worst we could do, honestly.
Yeah, true. What you just described is perfect. I mean, yeah, I have a very different perspective. I have a very different perspective on America's, foreign policy than one who would be born and raised in the Imperial Corps. I think that is probably my most unique perspective in comparison to all the other things I talk about. As far as like domestic policy in the United States, as far as my own personal political development, I would say that, my dad is a staunch, he would consider himself a social democrat, but he's a staunch neoliberal. Okay. Mm-hmm. This man, has been a staunch neoliberal, made a lot of money early on in his career, then lost it all by the time I got to college. But like the neoliberal attitude still stayed firmly in his mind, right? And I probably would have developed very differently if it wasn't for recognizing that the American dream was a lie pretty early on. You know what I mean?
Same here.
Like I had a perspective on American foreign policy that was negative, just like everyone else on the fucking planet. Even if you're in Europe, even if you live in Europe, for the most part, you don't really like the fact that like America dominates everything and America controls the conversation. Even if you benefit from it dramatically, you know what I mean, by being aligned with the United States. Like that's why you hear most Europeans be like, "Oh, fucking American pigs!" You know, they're so loud, they're awful, they're animals, and there's a lot of truth to them. But as far as capitalism goes, or as far as the American dream, I mean, this is like this dogmatic understanding is like a religion. American capitalism is basically like a religion.
Yeah,
and I could have totally. I could have totally bought into that if it wasn't for the fact that I think not having a nationalized healthcare system is so radicalizing. Or not having any kind of social like any kind of socialized healthcare structure is so fucking radicalizing. Hmm. Came to America young, dumb, with a lot of dreams.
I was against America's foreign policy. Like Jesus Christ.
Yeah, young, dumb, and full of cum, and you know, had big dreams. And then, you know, the healthcare was like immediately, I was like, this is fucked up. Yeah. And then seeing people defend it made me more and more angry. I was always an advocate for that. And then paired up with my, you know, disinterest in American lies about why, you know, the permanent revolution, but in a capitalist way that America engages in globally, that I thought that was, you know, that was not great. It basically developed into me finding Marxist theory and starting to slowly but surely become more and more radicalized.
Classical story. I had a similar one, just a bit more sped up. I did one of those work and travel programs, et cetera, et cetera. And just for 4 months of experiencing the American dream that I believed was, you know, completely achievable in every single corner of the world, just because, as we previously talked, you know, over here where I'm at, we still, you know, have the socialist brain because of the commies that came before, or we're like, you know, just culturally inferior. We need to become more like the Yanks and so on and so on. But then I went and actually saw it, and boom shakalaka. And with Hakim, he didn't have to go anywhere. The Yanks came to him.
It came to me.
Yeah, it came to him. American dream came to his doorstep.
Exactly right.
And then it made a lot of people dream, but forever, if you know what the fuck I mean.
Exactly right. Yeah, I think that's the most interesting aspect in the difference between radicalization when you're at the like at the end of the rifle of American imperialism, or just American foreign policy, and when you're behind it, when you see the soldiers, when you see the bombs and all this kind of stuff, you are at first filled with like this severe or just hatred of the United States and everything it stands for. And then afterwards, you take a step back and you analyze, and you're like, wait, hold on. Like Joe from like Philadelphia, who's on his third job like this week, that guy is not the guy who I'm angry at. I'm angry at a different set of people. And then you get into class analysis, and then that's when everything kind of comes together. But it's a lot more obfuscated, I can imagine, when you're in the United States, whether you've moved to the US or, you know, you're born there, because you don't see this as directly, and you're lied to so fucking much from, like, the day you're born. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested in hearing, I don't know if you guys have discussed this before, but I'm interested in hearing what JT's analysis of this is, or his radicalization of this is, because, you know, look, in some ways, I think all three of us and our perspective on the United States of America is, you know, it's obvious, right? But for someone to be born in the United States, to grow up in the United States, and then to have shared values like this in a country that is disseminating the most Red Scare propaganda, that has so effectively shut out any kind of class consciousness, I think that is even harder to do.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a pretty run-of-the-mill radicalization process. You know, Bernie came around, and I was just like, oh, wow, he's saying stuff I haven't heard before. Yeah, why is our healthcare so expensive? Stuff like that. And, you know how it goes. I heard the rhetoric like, oh, he's not actually a socialist. He's a social democrat. I'm like, okay, what's the difference between social democracy and socialism? And then I'd, you know, read a little bit more about that. And then the turning point for me was when I picked up State and Revolution and read that, and then things started to click.
Great, a little bit. Great book.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. For anybody who hasn't read State and Revolution, it's short, it's easy to read, it stood to the test of time really quite well. He's a funny guy. Like, Lenin's sassy. I love it. but it was an interesting process, because, you know, a lot of Americans, myself included, were by default kind of apolitical, in that it doesn't really affect us very much. You might dislike conservatives depending on where you live, because they're, you know, loud and obnoxious and racist and all that stuff, and so you've got a gut reaction, negative reaction against that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you consider yourself political, and I was that way. But it's really hard to find accurate information here in the US when everything from, you know, our textbooks to like children's shows to, you know, sitcoms as you grow up to the news to movies, blockbuster movies, it's all so steeped in anti-communist propaganda, you know, even to this day. And it's so you have this ingrained cultural revulsion or fear of anything that is seen as un-American. And that term has been so heavily conflated with left-wing economics, left-wing politics. I mean, properly left-wing, socialist and beyond, not the Democrats, which are clearly a right-wing party.
What do you mean? The Democrats are... I thought they were communists. What the fuck?
this morning, now that they've arrested their political rival, Donald Trump, we are living in communist America.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It's when the government does stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting, it's frustrating, and it's why I made my channel the way I did when I, you know, not to sound conspiratorial or anything, but like when I had my eyes open to the reality of how the United States actually works, I was like, okay, how would I have wanted this explained to me when I was first learning about this stuff? And so that's why I took the 101 approach, because, you know, the average American has, it's not just that they're starting from square one, they're starting from like square negative 30. You have to first pick apart all of the things that have been programmed into them, and then you can start to build upon a basis of reality.
You're describing the reason why so many people simultaneously consider me to be a Democratic Party mouthpiece or a suck dem or whatever the fuck, but also a threat to America as well, because I do, just like you said, I do advocate for social democratic reforms. And I do think that in order to develop any kind of mechanism of pushback, a robust labor force that has any kind of, you know, speaking power, any kind of fighting power to strike at the heart of the imperial core where value is generated, I think that in the short term, in order to combat against that, you have to advocate for a much lighter form of propaganda. Despite, you know, I perfectly understand that social democracies benefit tremendously from American imperialism, Western imperialism, and would not exist in the way that they do without such atrocities committed, right? But, you know, if you want America in the way that I feel about it, and if you want America to get out of the way for places with more revolutionary potential to do what they would normally do, I think that, you know, one thing you have to do is advocate for a lighter form while simultaneously still doing agitated propaganda that goes beyond, you know,
right,
social
yeah.
democratic ideas.
I just wanted to, like, put emphasis on the exact point of the so-called radicalization funnel, where, for example, Hassan and JT catch them while they're young, as they say, and then they start looking into this new idea, et cetera, and then move forwards through the funnel, get more and more informed, get more and more radicalized, and so on, can only work and can absolutely utilize, for example, the stuff that Hassan does, because Hassan does one very particular thing that social democrats that, for example, we would never call to this podcast or we would give a lot of shit to, because they cut the funnel from both sides. What do I mean by this? They introduce people to, you know, lukewarm socialist ideas, etc., etc., and then they want to keep them there, right? Well, whenever Hassan introduces people to socialist ideas, yes, the lukewarm, not so scary sounding ones, you know, keeping your power levels low, hidden, and so on and so on. He does not stop them from progressing through the funnel and getting additional information and so on. He doesn't agitate against, for example, the revolutionary perspective and so on and so on. That is the main difference, you know. You do your part in the funnel for the cause or whatever the fuck you want to call it. We'll talk later about, you know, if what we're doing actually does anything, et cetera, et cetera. But as long as you do not try to keep people exactly there where you want them and don't want them to evolve, et cetera, et cetera, then you're doing, in my modest opinion, a great thing for the cause. But unfortunately, there's a lot, especially, for example, on Twitch, motherfuckers that do the opposite. And they're just, because they want to farm their audience as much as they fucking can. And then they generate drama, which is almost 99% with other socialists, et cetera, et cetera. And that
I stay away from all that noise.
Exactly. Mm. And that is reactionary shit. That is quite literally anti-progressive and hurts the movement much more than it helps. So yeah, those are the two different.
I hate Wreckers, right? I mean, they've always been around, and I think originally Wreckers would operate almost like in a way that, you know, you salt a workplace, right? Like they would come in, they would have a different ideological perspective and they would do these things. Nowadays, I think in America, especially American exceptionalism, American individualism, American capitalism is so ingrained in the minds of people that like they do it without realizing. Like there are plenty of forms of what people would consider radical politics in leftist spaces that people engage in where they are unintentionally doing wrecker shit without recognizing that they're doing that. You know, you have anarchists, rad libs. I mean, I guess there's more historical precedent to that. But you have so many different flavorings of like, you know, the Nat socks or whatever, which is hilarious because that's just the most like anti-materialist perspective. You can have like nationalism in that regard. And all this other stuff, you know, that people engage with, and it just purely is that fight is purely fought on aesthetic, grounds, which is inherently one, a mystification of class politics, and two, very liberal. Mm-hmm. It's the most liberal thing you can do to be like, oh my god, like you wear expensive clothes, like you're fucking not a real leftist. Like you need to, as a leftist, you need to, or as an anti-capitalist or a socialist, like you can't have a house. Mm. You can't make money.
You need to live like an ascetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is inherently like, it's inherently anti-socialist. Like I'm no Dengist, right? But you know, you know the quote that I'm obviously referencing, but like socialism is not a poverty cult.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Exactly right.
Which prosperity is glorious all.
It is.
There's a very good article by Jonas Manuel, the Brazilian Marxist and organizer and historian, and he kind of ties in this European obsession with martyrdom in Christianity into the modern like flavor of Marxism that's practiced, and it's like where they almost deify failure in a way. So that's like every revolution that failed is the revolution that was always pure, it was perfect, they were doing everything right. But the second that they have to contend with the realities of building socialism with all its contradictions, all its difficulties, and yes, even its excesses, all of a sudden then it's like, no, this is not how it's supposed to be done. These people are revisionists or state capitalists or this, that. And it's always very telling that the people who are most vocal in this are the ones who have had the least successful leftist political projects, meaning Northwestern Europe and North America.
What was that joke? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, if a Marxist achieves a Marxist society, he loses the one thing that he always identified with because there's no longer a need for a said revolutionary Marxist. And a lot of people, like as you both, all three of you beautifully put, when you aestheticize it to an extent, you don't want it to actually happen because then you're no longer special, right? What makes me special is that I'm against, man, the status quo, bro. Like I want to fuck shit up and blah, blah, blah. But when the moment comes for fucking shit up, then you chicken out because you obviously only wanted to define yourself as different and not necessarily believed any of the shit that you're spewing. But on the, again, continuing in the line of, you know, aestheticization and all of this, I remember watching the shit show, which was the US elections a few years ago through your stream, and I remember it peaking at like over 200,000 like consecutive viewers at some point. And those are not rookie numbers, baby. Those are like CNN, Fox News numbers, and you know, you're just a guy and the skeleton crew of editors and managers. So like, is the traditional media, as cliche as it is, dying? Why is the obvious answer yes? And what do you think, you know, the future of political / news coverage will look like? Because, you know, a guy in a suit staring at a camera and reading off of a teleprompter is probably not it.
I don't know where the future of media will go. In many respects, what I do is actually not all that different than what like right-wing AM radio broadcasters would do and have been doing and will continue to do for many, many years probably. I mean, I am probably closer to a Rush Limbaugh, rest in piss, than like a John Stewart, I would say. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not speaking ideologically. I just mean, you know, content-wise. Or maybe even rhetoric-wise, honestly. I mean, he is a dishonest pervert, pill junkie who fucking died of brain cancer. But, you know, ultimately, he was doing off-the-cuff analysis from a reactionary perspective and was cutting a shitload of propaganda very successfully. And that off-the-cuff, like, nonstop content style has been around for a while. And I think I am doing something similar to that. With my channel, the only component that is different than what has come prior to this is what this medium allows me to do is speak to people directly and immediately with real-time feedback. And there has never been in the history of like commentary, content, whatever you want to call it, there has never been a medium that allows you to get real-time feedback from an entire audience. A stadium full of people.
Yeah.
I go live every day to, you know, 30,000, 40,000 people. If it's something that's like relevant happening in the news, like Donald Trump getting arraigned, 60,000 people. And every single person has the opportunity to basically write something and have me in front of 60,000 people read it out and respond to it. And I think that's what makes my content very unique. Mm-hmm. I think that that is what is really truly interesting about this is that like that that's why the de-radicalization stuff works well, in my opinion. Well, not de-radicalization or radicalization stuff works well, in my opinion, on the medium that I'm in, like picking people and moving them away from right-wing politics, reactionary politics, the alt-right pipeline, if you want to call it that. The way I'm able to do that is because I know the most effective talking points. I know the most effective counters. And I can do that by directly talking to people, and others with similar perspectives can get and develop a different opinion on these subjects in real time.
Basically, what Hassan is saying that is that he should pay his chat because thanks to chat, the show is actually good. But, you know, it's pretty incredible that people like us, you know, have found a model in which we get to, like, put food on our table while we spread our ideas and, you know, trick the market into quite literally allowing us to grow bigger and faster by the month so that we can proliferate more and more anti-capitalist rhetoric. You know, the capitalist will sell us the very rope we will hang them with, blah, blah, blah. Some have been, and I proudly say deservingly, super successful at this model, such as yourself, such as JT as well, such as one day this podcast, or to an extent even now, or like fucking insanely big shit like Chapo Trap House and others, which wink wink, you know, Patreon link is in the description. But nothing comes free of consequences, as they say. And you know, you being a great example of being wrongfully slandered just because you've managed to do well. So where do you think this criticism mostly comes from? Is it all just as you mentioned earlier, champagne socialist, so cringe, rightoid bullshit? Or do you think that, you know, some of it might come from a misguided but quote-unquote good place?
I'm sure some of it is coming from a misguided place. I think all of it's coming from a misguided place. It just ranges from like misguided and not fully understanding, grasping the situation and misinformed, to misguided and deliberately trying to cut takes that will gain prominence, that will get you to gain prominence in the tiny, already fractured socialist spheres of the internet, so you can get fucking more subscribers to your Substack or Patreon or whatever the fuck you're doing. And then last but not least, you have the people who portray themselves as like some form of anti-capitalist or leftist or even liberal sometimes, who are just doing that maliciously to find themselves in contention with socialists and never offer that same lens of skepticism, cynicism to all the way to Nazis even, you know. Yeah. It's just like so odd. I think there's varying degrees of debate pervertry and personal motivation, personal gain that people have in this regard. Ultimately though, I don't know, I just fucking keep my head down and I keep making content because it's not all that serious in many ways, the way I see it. I have no illusions. I do not believe that like I am going to create the armed revolutionary vanguard, one copy of, you know, imperialism, the highest state of capitalism on one hand, and then your Kalashnikov in the other, and we're going to, you know, overtake workers' councils. We're going to start taking over the American government. We're going to take over like American military bases and all this shit. Like that's not what I fantasize about. That's not something that I think is feasible in my lifetime. I simply try to put my best foot forward, be as entertaining as possible, make content while simultaneously describing the world from my perspective. A lot of people, I think, see that and go, oh, that means like you want to do a Maoist like peasants revolution in Iowa. You know, that's not, I don't think that is even I don't think we're even capable of doing that.
What I was just going to add is that a lot of people also take this, along the vein of what you're saying, a lot of people take this way too seriously or perceive what we do way too seriously. The revolution will not emanate from a bunch of people making content on the English language speaking internet,
yes,
leftist spaces on Twitch and YouTube and whatnot. The revolution is made on the ground by active organizations doing good work, agitating, educating, doing fucking homeless drives and trying to secure housing, trying to drive unionization efforts. In the United States, even then, with all these efforts, likelihood of revolution is fairly low. In the imperial periphery, it's a lot higher because the stakes are a lot higher as well. That's why we see success of leftist movements in those areas. But yeah, just wrap that point up that I want to say is Hugo Pney has a very good saying that he said several times, which is, no matter what we do, we're kind of like like in the Russian Revolution, people who put the posters up, the agitprop posters up, that's basically what we do. We want to bring about a slight cultural shift in attitude towards perceiving socialism, and hopefully educate some people and entertain some people in the meanwhile. Nothing any deeper than this, really.
It's crazy. I mean, there are some people online who, like you said, Akeem, take this way, way too seriously. Like, I tweeted out, I was complaining, I was looking for a new camera for my on-location stuff, and I tweeted my complaints about it. Like, I'm just complaining about Canon specs. And this person in the comments shows up, why aren't you building the revolution? I feel like you and Hassan could pool your resources and viewers together. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm a guy with a laptop and internet connection and some opinions. What do you want me to do? Like, join an organization, join CPUSA, PSL, FRSO, whatever you want to do. Don't look to the talking heads on YouTube or Twitch or whatever to be, you know, the leaders of this vanguard. That's just, it's bizarre.
Yeah, my favorite is when someone who thinks that they're like social democrat even, but like really they're just fucking neoliberal, will come and be like, Hassan, why don't you start a super PAC
to
bring about socialism in America? And I'm like, brother, I don't think a single billionaire could even do that.
Yeah.
And that motherfucker has billions and so much power. Because for every billionaire that would be like, I want to bring about my own demise and destroy the way that I've been able to, accumulate capital, right? For every billionaire that would even hypothetically do that, which would never happen, is laughable. There are, hundreds of billionaires that are like, abso-fucking-lutely not. We're going to murder you for even attempting this. It's a laughable notion. Again, it's like straight up trying to adopt the most liberal aesthetics or the most liberal solutions and completely misunderstanding how any of this stuff works.
The wildest fucking thing I watched randomly. I usually like watch the clips. I rarely watch the live because time zones and shit. But some debate with some dude, I don't even know his fucking name, but he's big or some shit. And this guy like unironically was proposing that if you're a socialist and you like you're doing this content and you're generating money off of this content, and for example, you want people to have free healthcare, you're supposed to like create like a company or an NGO
and provide
like healthcare for your fucking chat or your subscribers. Yeah. That was incredible. I fucking love that shit. That was like a proper like
it was great to watch, but so many people feel that. So many people believe that.
You think so?
Yes. Yes. In America, people literally think socialism is a poverty cult. People straight up think if you're a socialist, you need to like literally live this life of austerity. And every single dollar that you generate cannot go to like any kind of personal consumption because that's fucked up. If you're a capitalist, you could do all of that, by the way, which I addressed in that conversation where like, I work with labor unions in my merchandise when I make merch out here. Domestically manufactured products. It's already a burden. I don't want to even fucking do it. I just do it because like people want the merchandise. The margins are, you know, non-existent almost. But it's fine. People like it, so that's why I do it. But the guy I'm talking to is like using Indonesian child slave labor t-shirts that he's marking up to the same price that I'm selling my fucking t-shirts at. And I turned around and I asked him that question. And he was like, "Well, I'm a capitalist, you know.
Yeah, I get to do it."
Yeah, no, it's a ridiculous point to try to basically be or to say that, hey, you shouldn't be allowed any enjoyment under capitalism because those are quote unquote the fruits of capitalism. As a socialist, your, I guess, ideological outlook should be the fact that, you know, you should sleep underneath the fucking, underneath the bridge.
Yeah.
But I want to just add that unlike Hassan here, we're not revisionists. People on the deprogram Discord server do get free healthcare because they get access to me 24/7, which people fucking abuse. Yeah, they use and fucking abuse that shit.
So, you guys actually reply to all that shit. I like ghost the Discord so fucking hard at this point. Like the Patreon Discord, I think I have like 1,000 ads that I just haven't responded to. So I thank you. I thank you, kind sirs, for doing this shit because otherwise people would think we're dicks.
Look, some people ask me, it's like, I have this fucking nodule on my left nutsack. Is this okay? All the way from this to somebody who recently asked me, is like, I lost my medications, but I don't want what's it called? Restricted medications. And I don't want them to think that I'm abusing. What do I tell the pharmacist? I'm like, why are you asking me? Very kindly, I appreciate that you think that I have the answer. I just told him to be honest. That's usually, if he has no record of being an abuser before, then usually they'll like go through. But I don't know what the US is like. But yeah, or people send me blood tests. That's a vibe. Anyways,
like my capitalist brain just started working. Like that's actually a decent idea. We can make like a $1,000 Patreon like category, which is, you know, the program healthcare, and they have a direct line to you. You know, 14 hours a day, let's say, when call you and ask you any medicine related shit, and it would still probably be much cheaper than them engaging in American healthcare.
American healthcare, probably.
What's your hospital, bro? Like a podcast guy, a levitating Lenin head from Iraq, bro.
I do want to point out that both you Gobnik and Hakam, you're both VTubers technically.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Bro, guys, I'm not even kidding. I mean, I don't know if you guys watch anime at all, but like I would 100% suggest getting a VTuber model when you have the funds to do so, because that would be I think you would probably push people away a little bit at first because they'd be like, this is degenerate, pervertry or whatever. But I think later down the line you would be able to you'd be able to expand your audience tremendously considering that there's already a built-in audience for VTubers. I'm just saying, I high-key recommend it.
Yeah, we've had the idea, actually. We're playing around with doing it for the lives that we do on YouTube.
Bro, 100% you should do that. I'm not even kidding. I can link you up with like some VTubers as well that could help you out with that.
Yeah, for sure. Why not? Let's do it.
But I wouldn't create like a VTuber persona that's, you know, me, basically a... overweight, tall, hairy dude. I would just go with a very sexy, like anime girl, nice titties, fucking. Every time, you know, I move with the motion control, they jiggle and shit. You can do that, right? Yeah,
You can do all of that, but you got to do like a sexy guy who like sometimes wears cat ears or some shit. You know what I mean? That's like what the audience dictates. Exactly. That's what they want. So you can do that 100%, and it would probably be very. It would probably be very successful, I think. You just got to figure out a way to do sexy voice, though. Like, VTubers always have, like, a very good voice.
But when somebody gives a donation, they're like, meow, meow, I love you. Shit like that. This is what you mean?
Yeah. I don't really watch that much VTuber, even though, like, you know, I have some friends who do it. But from what I've seen, it's always, like, the guys always talk like, they either have like a voice like this, you know what I mean,
rizzed up,
or they're kind of like this, like, hey, what's going on?
The anime voice. Yeah.
Just work on your anime voice. I'm telling a fucking doctor in Iraq to you know, work on his fucking anime voice. We can do a VTuber.
Oh my god,
fucking weeb arc.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm gonna have to. Hey, weeb arc. People already think I'm a weeb. It's all right.
It would be low key, very freeing to actually be able to record ourselves on fucking camera, wouldn't it, Hakim?
Honestly,
and like the amount of filler you can fucking put in like the formal videos that we do.
Jesus
with
Christ,
just you know our face.
Dude, JT, you figured it out. Both you guys have fucking figured it out. Yeah.
No, 100%.
I don't know.
You gotta give them more. It's a medium that demands you to like give them something visually pleasing, and that's the reason. I think that's a good workaround off of your limitations. Yeah, check back with me when you have 3 million subscribers on YouTube because you started doing VTuber shit, and everyone's calling you a fucking counter-revolutionary champagne socialist. That means you've made it. So there you go.
Exactly.
Fuck
right.
Yeah. Oh,
I can't wait.
Honestly, with Hakim, obviously, it's a bit more dangerous. But me, just because I'm a coward that I haven't like done just a proper face reveal and to just like put myself in videos and so on. Yes, obviously, it will increase the chances of me getting stabbed by fucking reactionaries in the part of the world where I live at. And they are very numerous here, as we all very, very well know. But, you know, it would directly mean that this will become like my 100% profession, which I would like. I'm not complaining. And already kind of the income that we're getting from this would be able to support it. But it's kind of, you know, putting all your cards on one thing, you know. So I'm just waiting to amass some more courage to completely get out of the corporate world and shit like that. But
dude, anonymity is great. My biggest mistake was using my real name and face from the jump, and engaging in advocacy for the past 10 years openly. I would recommend, like, don't lose that. It's honestly, it's better. There was other stuff I want to talk about. Like, look, with respect to just like content creation in this sphere, I think another reason why people think this is the end all be all is because there is no true class consciousness, no way of implementing any sort of change in this country. So a lot of people, I think, in the Western world look to content creation as a form of, I guess, revolutionary praxis or something. Like, they think that that is, like, ultimately the most revolutionary act you can engage in is tweeting or saying things, completely misunderstanding what I am advocating for. But this is something that I think I've successfully been able to implement in my community or instill this idea that it is not. That this is just content, and that they should unionize their workplaces. They should join organizations, which plenty of people have. They've started, you know, YDSA chapters. There are, you know, there was an article I think in like fucking Politico that talked about how the first Chipotle they unionized in Lansing, Michigan. Like, this guy was, I think, reading Mark Fisher, and another guy came over, saw it, and was like, "You watch Hasanabe?" and then they brought up Noam Chomsky. It was just such a weird thing to be fucking brought up with those two guys. But you know, there are people out there that are unionizing their workplaces, and there are people out there that are engaging in strikes if they're already if they're rank and file already unionized, you know. So that sort of stuff makes immediate small very real, tangible material changes in your immediate life. And I think that that is why I do what I do. But it's not, you know, speaking about certain issues ultimately is you know, just the first step. It's not necessarily the last step.
Much as praxis, which I guess one of the concluding questions we can go into that you, as with a few others, already answered before I even asked them, and making my job extremely difficult here. I'm fucking with you. But not, that's, I guess, the biggest fear of what we do, to an extent, at least from my perspective, is that when we create this shit and people consume this shit, does that increase their, you know, anti-capitalist fervor, or does it indirectly placate it? Because, you know, they sat down today, they watched this video, they listened to this stream, they, you know, read that blog article or whatever type of content that you're creating, and that already gives them enough of a feeling, you know, the gut feeling that, oh, for today, I've done, quote-unquote, my part for the ideas that I would like to espouse into the world and to manifest and to materialize, etc. So it's kind of a scary question to ask ourselves, because we actively, you know, encourage real life activism, agitation, organization, and so on and so on, from one perspective, from one side of the coin. But then from the other side of the coin, similar to, like, literally like bourgeois elections, you feel you only go once every 4 years. You put in that little fucking tablet choice, or the, you know, the thing, the paper in the box, and it gives you the sense that, oh, I've done my part for my community for the next 4 years. You know, the scary question is, do we, to a certain extent, by creating the stuff that we do, contribute to a very similar problem? And the only, like, it's not really even a question, because you know, you subjectively can answer this, blah blah blah, but only time will tell if there is any actual you know, material contribution that comes that goes towards the movement, the ideology of, you know, our poster making, or if it's quite unintentionally, to an extent, reactionary and shit. Do you get what I mean?
No, I totally understand it. You're saying you're asking if we are also playing a role in sedating the masses,
exactly,
despite our best efforts to instill class consciousness. Because people think that it is a revolutionary act to consume a piece of content that, you know, or even like read theory, I guess, which would be the more advanced version of this. And I don't know, I would categorize it not even as theory, but as just entertainment, really. Like, I don't ever think about it like that at all. I don't think about, like, whether or not this is, you know, stopping people from, like, genuinely engaging in this kind of action, because I don't think that a lot of these people would even know anything about socialism in general if it weren't for someone trying to slowly, I guess, I hate this term, but bread pill them, you know? So for me, like I said, it's not that serious in my... Like, from where I'm standing, I talk about so much dumb shit over the course of 10 hours, depending on what part of the broadcast you're tuning into. Like, I'm playing fucking horror games and shit, you know what I mean? Like, I don't live my life as though, like, every single moment and every single point of my output is supposed to be, like, socialist Jesus, you know?
Of course.
I think that it's important to have fun. I certainly have a lot of hedonistic desires that I cave to regularly. That's why, you know, I bought a nicer house than what, you know, revolutionaries on Twitter thought was appropriate. So I bought a fucking Porsche, you know, and I have the capacity to do so. So I did it, but also because, you know, it just, makes the limited amount of daily commute that I do more enjoyable. And I think everyone should, you know, do things like that if they have the capacity to do so. Ultimately, though, it's just I'm an entertainer. I'm an entertainer first. Yeah. I'm not a revolutionary activist. I'm not a leader in the movement. I just do entertainment. if there is more value in that entertainment for someone that, that feels like their worldview has changed, and that's great. That's my, that's definitely a goal. But ultimately it's educational entertainment, edutainment.
Absolutely fair enough.
Very, very nicely put.
You know, I do stress it though. I do stress the importance of doing shit in the real world all the time. Cause I think that, you know, if your interest in improving your material conditions begins and ends with consuming content, then, you know, you're not going to get anything done and you're not going to feel the positive impact that you might have on your community or in your own personal life by engaging in these kinds of actions. So that's something that I try to instill in my audience regardless. You know, something I always repeat on my broadcast is that society prospers when old men plant seeds for trees that they will never sit in the shade of, right? I'm sure you guys have utilized this before as well. I think that that is what's important. You're building blocks for a better future that you may never experience or you may never enjoy the fruits of.
Yeah,
absolutely.
At the end of the day, it's two things we have to be aware of. The first one is to make sure that at the end of the day, capitalism commodifies everything, including what would be considered to be quote-unquote revolutionary content, which this isn't. This is entertainment, but you know what I mean. Leftist content, in essence, becomes a commodity, regardless of whether we can help it or not. Even if none of it was absolutely monetized, like this was completely done just to have the information out there, in the same way they would form the same processes behind it, the fact that it would become like, oh, a figure that then has the drama shit behind it, all that. So that's one thing we have to keep in mind. But number two, and I think more importantly, again, not to take it so seriously. If you want to take politics seriously, then you take politics seriously in your real life, day-to-day activities. Otherwise, what you're doing here is just to entertain yourself, number one, kind of to educate yourself.
Bro,
but at the end of the day, the same.
No, exactly. That's the thing. Like, here's one thing I'll say. People get so mad about how much money I make. Or what I'm doing with the money, even though I do a lot of fundraising, I do a lot of donations, even though like I think charity is not the end all be all, obviously, and there's plenty of issues with 501c3s and all that. No need to have that conversation on this podcast of all places. But people get so mad about the amount of money that I make when it is literally voluntary subscriptions. Like that is my revenue strategy. It's the exact same as like people with Patreons. It's the exact same with people with Substacks. Half the time, the people chirping at me are literally people with Substacks. They just don't have, you know, any subscribers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only difference. And so, like, the way I'm generating income is identical to the way that they are trying to generate income while they're angry. And that's what I try to explain to people regularly. We're like, you don't even need to fucking pay a subscription. Everything is free. Not only is the content free, but the IP in and of itself is free as well. If you want to use it, if you want to fucking watch it, there's like 1,000 fan channels out there that, you know, cut and re-upload this content. Sometimes don't even edit it at all. They just like literally pump it out. And I see a lot of value in that. The reason why I see a lot of value in that is not because like that audience expands and then they come back and watch me and then subscribe to my channel or anything. But my goal always is to get this kind of information in front of as many people as possible. So that's why I do it the way I do it. And I think it's probably one of the most ethical ways that you could do it, at least from my perspective. I'm not exploiting anyone. You know, I do work with some people, and the revenue share structure that we have is they're very fond of it, at least, you know what I mean? And but it doesn't really matter.
There's no need for you to explain or to attempt to. I know that's not what you're doing. You're just trying to give context, but like all of us, no, we don't owe anybody an explanation in these things. If your problem is not with the content, or if you otherwise agree with the content, but your issue is with, oh, because somebody makes some income off of it, there's far more, let's say, less pleasantly attained income of many other forms of like, you know, jobs and careers and whatnot. And for somebody to just kind of center on some random guy like you in the US making content on Twitch, or like JT, for example, again, like, it makes it so, not disingenuous, it's just so pointless. I don't understand. It becomes you don't like the person and then you go after them because of this. I don't think that this is the fundamental point of your critique.
Well,
it goes back to the whole failure cult thing, where it's like, whether you're a successful YouTuber, Twitch streamer, whatever, or one that is not successful. It's the ones that don't have any followers. Oh, they're the pure ones. They're following the whatever line, the party line is. And then as soon as you cross some arbitrary threshold of whether it's subscribers or patrons or whatever, then suddenly you're revisionist and all the people come out of the woodwork to criticize the work you're doing, even if the work you are doing has not changed since the beginning of your channel. Mm.
It's really sad that it identifies, I mean, talked about this 100,000 times, but I guess it needs to be repeated again and again and again and again and again and again. They identify poverty with wisdom. They identify poverty with being able to genuinely stand behind the Marxian ideas that we're all pushing here, et cetera, et cetera. They miss the structural analysis of why certain profit making is not even quote-unquote bad. Like, Marxism rarely talks in like liberal moral fucking terms, etc. It is, from the proletarian's perspective, we are getting the shorter end of the stick because the owner gets to keep most of the fucking shit. Somebody who streams, YouTubes, or whatever the fuck, she creates the fucking content by themselves, markets it, puts it out there on whatever fucking platform, and then people come and voluntarily give them money. This is nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the capitalist structure, with the way it operates, with the system that
MCM.
Us Marxists criticize, except it's like it has absolutely no connection to it. And it's very pathetic to think that that modesty, as it's defined by our overlords, not as the key human trait that we all possess, but the idea that it's good to eat dirt, that it's good to be on the bottom because then you are morally superior, etc., is pathetic and anti-Marxist, because the whole fucking idea literally says we can do better. We can be something more than just fucking malls and shopping centers and bombs on brown people. So it's a snake that eats its own fucking ass at the end of the day. You cannot consider yourself a fucking progressive or this or that that category if you think that there is anything good in someone eating shit and licking the boot every fucking day. That's why it kind of irks me extra. I know it's a whatever talking point, blah blah blah. Oh my god, these guys talk about having first world problems and shit. But it's much more expansive than people criticizing Twitch streamers, YouTubers that are your socialists and they make money, because it's
so insignificant.
You see it in organizations. You see it in parties. You see the idea that somehow only through harsh pain and suffering you can truly understand that that you're living in a shithole, because shithole system. Because if that was true, that was really true, then God fucking help us, because not a lot of people are going to sign up for what we're fucking selling.
Yeah, no, it's so counterproductive. I despise it when leftist people do it, because it's so inherently counterproductive. You make it seem like it's the same as like when people are behaving in like annoying, woke, scoldy ways as well, where you're like making your politics aesthetically unapproachable. And some people think that that makes you morally pure. And I feel like it's so stupid. It is so insanely dumb. I think accessibility is key here. From my perspective, there are two things that I value. I value charitability and I value accessibility. And you are effectively dismantling any kind of charitability that people might have to my worldview and the things that I'm advocating for. So if you're truly aligned with the principles that I'm espousing, then why the fuck are you working desperately to make someone like myself less approachable to a broader population? It's just so self-defeating. It's part of the reason why I rarely ever engage with... I engage in drama all the time because my name is brought up regularly as a very effective means to galvanize an audience of like psychotic reactionaries. You'll get a bump from that. So they will like tack me on to any kind of fucking drama happening with like content creators on the internet, which is a nuisance. It's annoying in and of itself. But like, I rarely ever engage with like, I would say like even liberal or leftist infighting. Because I think it's unproductive. I think it's harmful. I think it's stupid. And I think that even if I disagree with a content creator's worldview, even if I disagree with where they're coming from, there are always going to be people in their audience that might be a little bit more radical in their politics or ripe for radicalization, like those in the margins, who I would much rather have on my side than against me, especially if they're like moving the needle in a direction in the United States of America that eases some of the burdens that the working class would experience.
So that was that for this episode. I hope that you learned that Hassan is not just a Sotsdem cuck. There is some actual complicated brain patterns emerging there. And that obviously we are all a part of the same funnel. And as long as how he ended the conversation, as long as we help this funnel grow and help this funnel expand without shooting each other in the foot, this is all a great way of moving forward. With that being said, Hassan, thank you one more time for coming to the show. Please, to the three people in the audience that don't know who you are, tell them where they can find your work, some stuff that may be some projects that you're planning on doing in the future, etc. And before I let you take over, as always, thank you very much to our patrons, without whom this show would not be able to run. Check it out. You get plenty of benefits, early episodes, Discords, chats, etc. Thank you for all of those who currently support us and for those considering doing that in the future. So Hassan, please.
Well, thank you for having me on once again. I am Hassan Piker, also known as Hassanabi. I'm live every day on Twitch at twitch.tv/Hassanabi after 11 a.m. Pacific. And that's pretty much it. That's what I do. That's all I do. That's all I spend my days on. I also have a podcast on the side called Fear And, but that's not very political. It's just with some of my co-hosts. We just like shoot the shit, talk about irrelevant stuff happening on the internet. And that's it, honestly. I mean, keep up the good work, guys. I think you guys do a great job, both on your individual channels and also together. And I'm very happy that I finally was able to come on.
Likewise, and thank you.
All right, and this has been the Deprogram. I'm Hakim.
I'm JT.
I'm Yugopnik.
I'm Hassan.
And Hassan is white thanks to my ancestors. Okay, yes.
Exactly right.